Go ahead.
Okay. The next section of amendments is after line 43 on the same page, page 7. You're talking about when you're attempting to register the foreign state's administrative or judicial order, you're sending out a notice to that person saying, hey, we're going to register this particular thing. This subsection E would be a statement to the parent saying, if you don't think the current support is appropriate and you want it changed, then you can request that you be required to pay a different amount of future support. This is merely the technical language of the notice that's being sent out. Then you have a series of, on line 44 and on page 8, changing subsection.
Before you leave, I'm looking at the paragraph that begins after line 43, insert colon, all right? If you look at the next to the last line in the paragraph and the phrase different than those required, you see that? Okay, I'm suggesting that the word than, that the word from be substituted for the word than.
I have no problem with that.
Okay.
I think there's a series of thens in this in these amendments. So. Okay, moving on to deleting line 5 on page 8. Again, this is simply carrying forth what I perceived was the committee's intent. The statement that if you don't request a hearing within 14 days or you don't request that the order amount in the future be different, then a default order can be entered. That's just simply another statement that goes on the notice to the obligor. The deletion in line 6 of within 14 days is because you've stuck it in line 5. Going down to line 15, after request, insert, or request for different future support payments, again, that is merely, that's the, subsection 3 there, starting at line 15, is the operative language. We're off the notice now, and we're actually into the operative language of what is required. Again, it's consistent. If you don't get a hearing within 14 days, or a request for hearing, or a request for different future support payments, then you can go ahead and default a particular person. In line 17, a sentence is added saying the 14 days may be extended by the administrator and is not jurisdictional. In other words, if it comes in on the 15th, 16th, 17th day, the administrator can say, okay, yeah, we'll receive that hearing request and we'll go ahead to have a hearing. That is consistent with language that's already in the law regarding notices and findings. So in fact, it's identical language. And in fact, the Support Enforcement Division routinely waives late requests and goes ahead and grants hearings. Next is deletion of line 22 and insertion, if the parent does request a hearing or request a change in the future support amount, then a hearing shall be held. In line 26, essentially after the wanted to clarify that the defenses are to confirmation of the order, and there's a new subsection A there, it's inserted in line 25, separates out those defenses that can be raised to the confirmation of the order, and then after line 33, a new subsection B, which says when there is a request for a different future support amount and there is sufficient information, then you'll use the support guidelines that are required to be developed in 416-420.
Mr. Young, should then the lines 27 through 33 be numbered rather than lettered? Do those have to change? In line 25, after the period, we're creating A. So my question is, do we then need to redesignate those letters in 27 to 33?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Kramer, yeah, it'd be capital A, capital B, capital C, capital D. I didn't catch that.
Any questions, Mr. Young? With the changes suggested by counsel and the one minor nitpick that I suggested, Senator Brennan moves the amendments to Senate Bill 210, dated March 31st. Any discussion on that? Any objection? so ordered. Senator Brennan removes Senate Bill 210 as amended then to the floor of the pass resolution.
Cohen. Oh, it says is anticipated in the governor's recommended budget, so we need to make sure that that's noted on the floor. We have another little example of a couple hundred thousand.
Okay.
Well, about 100,000 price tags. So that's okay. I mean, we just need to be aware of it when we get those kinds of things to the floor, and I don't know what they do.
As long as it's anticipated, it makes it a little smoother sailing.
Further discussion? Call the roll on that, please.
Aye.
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 Aye. The motion carries. Volunteer? Want to carry it, Senator Brennan, or not? It's a little technical, but that's why I'm asking for a volunteer.
There's blue section shirt. By section analysis in it, however, if you know, so it's not going to be that bad.
Whatever, whoever wants it.
Yeah, I will if you like.
One?
Brennan will.
Okay, I'll Senator Brennan.
I've got a blue shirt for the occasion.
I didn't notice a whole lot of hands going up on that. Okay, counsel.
On Senate Bill 211, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, there are again two sets of amendments to consider. This is an omnibus bill. It has several different sections that are attached to it. We'll talk about the amendments. The amendments are substantive in that it allows the department not to, or at its option, to compute interest. One of the other salient aspects of the bill is in Section 10, which would change law by allowing workers' compensation monies to be subject to the same type of wage withholding that other monies obtained from employment. Or I believe unemployment would be. On that particular issue, on Section 10, Oregon Trial Lawyers Association, which had asked for time to make a statement for this committee, is not going to have any position in front of this committee on that measure, and does not indicate it to me they do not oppose that section.
Excellent.
The committee should be aware that that particular issue in Section 10 has been before the legislature at least once before and failed to get out of the House Judiciary Committee. Mr. Young, could you explain the two sets of amendments? Again, the first technical amendments are on March 18th. The second set of amendments, which the committee just got, dated March 31st.
Mr. Chair, the March 18th amendments, the first part of them clarifies on page 1, line 5 of the bill, that a contingent order can be entered by a court under any of the ORS chapters that allow you to enter a support order when a child is in the care and benefit of CSD. And the situation that typically arises is that a child goes into CSD care and then very often is in and out of CSD care. And occasionally a support order is entered for the benefit of CSD. And rather than having to dismiss the support order every time the child goes out of care and reinstitute it, this section allows the court to enter a contingent order. There are already similar sections in the law which allow contingent orders to be entered. The administrator can enter contingent orders under ORS 416, 417, and the juvenile court can already enter a contingent order under ORS 419, 513, sub 2. The amendment is simply to clarify that it's not all support orders that are going to be made contingent. It's only when the support order is obtained for the benefit of CSD. It wouldn't apply to a typical divorce decree or something like that. On page 2, line 37, the amendment is to, before the period, to insert, if any. This is that is to clarify the authority of the court to go ahead and enter a wage withholding order when there is no current support. Currently, it's an open question whether or not the court has the authority to enter a wage withholding order for collection of past due support if there is no current support order. And the if any is merely to emphasize the point that the court can go ahead and do so. It has in the past been a practice, a widespread practice of the Support Enforcement Division, I can't speak for the district attorneys, to go ahead and get judicial wage withholding orders on order-only cases. When this matter came to my attention earlier this year, I raised the question of whether that or not that was particularly appropriate. And awaiting legislative action, the Support Enforcement Division is no longer obtaining such orders. I advise them that they should not do so, although it's an open question. Better to be safe than sorry on this particular issue. On page 10, delete lines 28 and 30. This was the section involving support payments, the length of which a support payment is a judgment. The section proposed that it be 20 years. Currently, it's 10 years. The section proposed that you wouldn't be able to renew it. Currently, it's 10 years and you can renew it. It seems to me that this is a very complicated area and that unnecessarily complicates the issues, so we simply propose that section, subsection be deleted.
And that would maintain then current law?
That is correct.
Of 10 with a renewal?
Yes.
An option for it.
Mr. Young, before you get to the next set of amendments, the other major change, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this bill makes is in Section 8, which provides that all child support payments are judgments on and after their due date. That clarifies the issue which is open, which currently says that child support payments which are part of a dissolution decree are judgments, and this would make child support payments, whether or not they're part of a dissolution decree, judgments on or after their due date, which may not be retroactively modified or altered by the court.
Well, there's a major change. I don't think we discussed that, did we, at the hearing? I don't recall.
Mr. Chair, there was testimony on this particular issue, and that the requirement to make all past due support payments a judgment is a federal compliance requirement. It was passed in Public Law 99-509 on October 21st of last year. It's found in Section 9103, and I did attach a copy of that law to my testimony. The system in Oregon now, I think the general practice and belief among attorneys practicing in the state of Oregon is that any time a support order becomes due, it is in fact a judgment. And that clearly is the case by statute under for any divorce decree. ORS 107-135 already provides that. It's less clear for orders that fall due under various other chapters where you can enter support orders. This would clarify that it applies to all support orders across the board. Title companies routinely treat this as a judgment if there is a lien. They, to my understanding, they say you can't sell your house until you clear the lien. They treat it as a judgment.
Go ahead.
Can you address the next set of amendments dated March 31st, Mr. Young?
Okay. The amendments, the first amendment is simply to the relating clause. The amendments starting on page 3, line 4, for March 31st, basically, subsection B, starting on page 2, line 41, and going up to the top of page 3, allows the Support Enforcement Division to obtain an order to withhold to collect arrearages that are assigned to the state in those cases where the custodial parent has not requested that the Support Enforcement Division or the district attorney provide continued services to enforce the current support order. There's no requirement that they necessarily enforce the current support order. That leaves the Support Enforcement Division in a bind in terms of collecting money owed to the state, because under Department of Human Resources administrative rule, when money is received, initially it has to go to current support. I'm sorry, that does not apply here. It makes it very difficult to collect the past due support that is assigned to the state. And what you have to do is you have to go out and get individual garnishments. And what this subsection B would do would be to allow you to get a wage withholding order. Now, the question was raised by Mr. Kramer in discussions with him subsequent to the hearing. Senate Judiciary Committee has passed Senate Bill 421, which places certain limits on how much you can collect, and that is 25%, which was already incorporated in the subsection B. And also, the amount that's available for garnishment is only that amount that's in excess of the obligor's wages over 40 times the minimum applicable federal wage. So the first bunch of amendments is to incorporate what the Senate has already passed in Senate Bill 421 and put the same limits on any order to withhold, merely making it consistent. Okay. The amendments starting on page 11 after 29 insert is section 11, 12, and 13 are the same amendments that I brought to you before at the hearing last time on Senate Bill 421. At that point, I gave written testimony on them. It involves the ability or the requirement to compute interest and the ability to waive interest. My testimony is in Senate Bill 421. At that point, Mr. Chairman, you suggested that the amendments that were proposed to Section 1 be adopted in some form, and the subsequent amendments, which were Sections 2 through 4 of my proposed amendments to 421, be tacked on to Senate Bill 211. This is the tacking on proposal. If you want me to go through the issues again, I would be happy to do that.
Senator Cohen suggests not.
But I remember what they are. I don't know, but I was here for this part of the hearing.
Yeah, all right. Anybody else need any further explanation on these?
I'm sure I'd move adoption. Do we have any additions, Mark?
We have just the two sets of amendments that have been March 18th and March 31st.
No nitpicking, Mr. Chairman. Not even a small one.
Oh,
and I'd move it. I'd move the amendments
all
as
right.
presented on March 31 and March 18th by the Department of Justice.
Senator Cohen moves the March 18th and March 31st amendments to Senate Bill 211 as proposed by the Department of Justice. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Cohen moves Senate Bill 211 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Call roll, please.
Aye.
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 Aye. That motion carries. Senator Hill or anyone over there on the far left, want to volunteer? A volunteer for this?
I'll do it.
I defer to
the punch.
Senator Brockman, you want to do that?
Sure.
Okay. Okay, is that anything else for Mr. Young?
That's it.
All right, thanks for being here again.
Thank you.
Let's see where we should go. Let's take now we can take
get harder.
Let's take I'd like to get
where do I do this one?
Get 581 out in a hurry.
Which one?
581.
Well that's already been passed.
Oh, pardon me.
Yeah, that's already been passed out of the committee. It shouldn't be on the agenda today.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's take a look at Senate Bill 311, and any members tell me what you want to do with that.
Sort of looking at it, gathering these things out.
Say that there was an amendment suggested or not.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I discussed with the Attorney General and with other members of the committee as to whether an amendment relating to a grandfather's clause for spas that are sold to new owners, whether that was something that was appropriate. And there has not been any amendment drafted because it appeared that that amendment would not satisfy the concerns of those that opposed this bill. So it is before you in its printed form.
The chair, who's the principal sponsor of the measure, doesn't have any position on it. That's why I'm deferring to the committee members.
There is a member of the, Mr. Woods here from the Attorney General's office, if you have any questions about the bill.
Senator Brennan, by the way, spoke to some of the spa owners about this. I don't recall what he told the council about it this morning exactly, but he's not here to tell us.
Well, there definitely was, I think, a need existing at the time that we had hearings subcommittee of the Interim Judiciary Committee. I am not convinced from the hearing the other day that the same need exists, so I'm, I don't know, it's not a, I would say it's not a matter of a great moment to me, so whatever you want to do with it, it's, other members think that there's a, still a need or not.
I didn't get the feeling, Mr. Chair.
I don't feel there's a great need.
And Senator Hill, do you have any thoughts on this at all?
No, Sharon.
I'd submit it. I mean, I would vote for it, but I, you know, I don't know enough to really want to carry it all by myself. There are people who are concerned by it. I.
Chair moves the table. Senate Bill 311. Call roll.
Aye.
Aye.
No. No.
Aye.
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 Aye. And motion carries. Is there? Yes. Let's go at least. Yes.
Never mind. I just wanted kind of a vote explanation, I guess. If the spas are unwilling to deal with this, then at least we don't have that problem with the wives and those kind of people. So I guess I sort of see this as a reasonable accommodation, and I guess that's my comment for the record, that when we get back into discussion of when these private fitness clubs come to us in, with their concerns about the wives, etc., you know, I will remind them of this bill and their opposition to it, and in my suggestion that they either get on with taking care of their own business or look at it in a different manner. So I just want to raise that for the sensitivities of other committee members and for anybody who's following it here on behalf of the private spa owners.
Who just left the room a few minutes ago.
So I guess I'll put that in my file for the other bill, and when something comes up on the floor, maybe we can refer that one to this committee and look at them in tandem.
All right. I think those remarks are probably well taken. Senate Bill 300 is, let's see, do we have any, we don't have any proposed amendments to that, do we?
No.
The chair's in favor of sending this bill out, and but I know that that's not the unanimous feeling of this committee. But I kind of wonder, I haven't heard from most of you on it, so.
2011, Mr. Chair.
Senate Bill 300, that relates to enlarging the Commission on Uniform State Laws from 3 to 4. You recall the testimony we had, representative of one of the big three law firms in the state for it, and a representative of one of the other big three law firms against it, kind of like we did 2 years ago. And So I guess that I'd... I guess I want to find out whether there are four votes here to send it out or not.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't...
I'm not one of them.
Excuse me. I'm not sure really how I feel about it. I know there's some feelings that run both ways, and kind of when I'm in that position, I'm more inclined, I guess, to go against it. But I guess I haven't been convinced that there's the need to add that additional member.
Okay.
But I don't know how others feel.
I think I voted, but I'm
yes.
not as enthusiastic this year.
All right. Any other non-enthusiastic people?
Like.
Yeah. Senator, I believe I voted for it last time, and I always wondered why I did. And therefore, I'm not going to this time.
You always wonder why it got out last time?
Huh?
I didn't understand you.
I said I believe I did vote. I voted for it last session.
Yes,
as well.
I think it came out with all of us voting for it, I think.
Yeah.
Oh no, Mr. Chairman.
Oh no?
No. I've been a no vote on this.
No vote
forever, I think. And probably so I'm not inclined to change my mind. But
you have would you mind sharing your thoughts with me on that?
Well, I think primarily I have people from the Lewis and Clark Law School have concerns about it, and of course the law schools do have concerns that it takes away from that particular trust, et cetera, and so I'm just inclined to. I haven't heard any real pervasive arguments about why you need to add another person, and I just soon stick with my law school. And that's really where I am on that.
Well, I'll tell you, I think in the last session there was no question about the fact that it was a big turf battle between two law firms. That's the way I looked at it.
Yeah.
But right now, I perceive the principal reason for the bill is to assure that a woman, to wit, the attorney from Astoria, Snow, I've forgotten her first name, who testified on the bill, by the way, and she was on the commission, and was not reappointed by Governor Attia for whatever reason, but the proponents of this bill thought she was an excellent member, and I think the purpose of the bill is to provide a position that she could be appointed to, so that I'm guessing is the reason. And, well,
Mr. Chairman,
somebody, yes.
I just wasn't at all convinced, I guess, in this, that there was that much workload, that then there was an additional person. If I could be convinced otherwise, I would support it.
Well, we can always table it, and then, you know, if people want to change their minds, we can take it off the table again. So, yes, Mr. Young, did you have a thought on this? Yes, come ahead.
Chair Lawrence Young, I'm the immediate past chair of the Uniform State Laws Committee, and it was at my insistence that this bill was brought before this legislative session. I think, in essence, you're getting down to the true reason why this bill is brought. Janice Snow, who is an attorney from Astoria, was a member of the commission, and there were certain politics going on, which I'm not privy to, in the governor's office, which resulted in her losing her appointment. She was not only a valuable member of the conference, she was also vice president of the conference, and as a result, she lost that office and I think a chance to bring some significant benefit to the state of Oregon in terms of prestige and possibly a convention, which would mean some money to the state of Oregon.
She would have been the first woman president of that organization. I think it's too bad that happened, but then it happened. So I guess my guess was right on this.
That, Mr. Chair, that position, however, would not be available any longer to her. My tip.
Mr. Chair, she served as a holdover for the full vice presidency. I suspect she could be nominated as president. As far as her being renominated to the commission, the appointments come up on a periodic basis, and somebody else could simply not be appointed. One of the problems with the Uniform State Laws Committee is it is generally very nice to have members from your state on the committee, because that ensures that other states' laws are going to tend to conform to what you have in your particular state. And that's rather attenuated, I agree. But One of the problems with the Uniform State Laws Commission is after 20 years of service on the committee, you become a life member. And it used to be Oregon had the same people appointed over and over until we got life members, and then you opened up spaces for new people. And it goes both ways. I believe the amendment supported by Senator Fry last session would have prohibited successive terms on the Uniform State Laws Committee, and therefore that would have obviated any possibility of getting life members. This doesn't.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Young. Well,
why not?
Okay. I think it might be, well, who wants to do what, Mayor? I'd just say one further thing. You know, we have a number of uniform state laws in Oregon, and it seems like every session there are one or two more proposed. And as far as I'm concerned, we could have six members of the commission there because...